Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit for Wednesday the 15th of 2020, January 2020, episode number 3. So we're chugging along. I'm your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm co-host Frank Natel.
And Frank, before we get too busy into the weeds, I got a question for you. Have you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of Robert F. Hyde?
Until today, I had not, but quite an interesting character. Quite an interesting character.
That's an understatement. Robert F. Hyde is somebody who was running for Congress from, I want to say, Connecticut?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Or he's a Republican, correct? Can get, geez, oh man, we're just starting. It's just going to get worse. He is a Republican congressional candidate in Connecticut who apparently has spent a whole boatload of time in Mar-a-Lago and whatever the hell Trump's D.C. Hotel's name is. Anyhow, there was a dump, and the reason I'm asking this is because there was a huge data dump late yesterday, from the House Intelligence Committee. And before we go any further, most of my information I'm getting from Vox, from VOX, but also NBC. The House Intelligence Committee very quietly released a whole bunch of impeachment inquiry evidence late yesterday afternoon and into the night. These documents were provided by Lev Parnas. Okay, if people don't remember who Lev Parnas was. He was one of Rudy's guys. He was one of Rudy Giuliani's guys, right? Anyhow, this thing got ugly in a big hurry. That one of the first things they released was a picture of a handwritten note on I believe it was Ritz-Carlton Hotel stationery. You know, like those little stationery pads that you have in the hotel room. You know, it was like on a little desk. You have a little pad and a pen.
Yep.
One of those things. It's just a convenience thing. But on it, he wrote "Get Zelensky," which would be the new Ukraine president. Get Zelensky to announce that the Biden gate case will be investigated. And I believe that was the first thing, or one of the first things that was released. It just kind of goes on from there. That one is particularly damaging because of the time whenever this thing was written. Was written well before everybody started denying everything. But what was insisted that the press, let me start again. A lot of these documents provided not only the strongest evidence yet that there is a corrupt understanding involving the, I believe it was prosecutor general, an Ukrainian official. I want to say his last name is Luzhenko. But he offered to investigate Burisma and the Bidens. But there was a quid pro quo attached to that. And that was, he insisted that the U.S. ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, everybody remembers her name, right? She testified, was the older redheaded lady that testified in front of Congress. I guess those two clashed like crazy. And so he offered to investigate Burisma, the Bidens, and that whole conspiracy theory if the United States fired Yovanovitch. But what was even worse was these text messages that Parnas exchanged from one Robert F. Hyde, as we said earlier. He told Parnas that he had people tracking Yovanovitch's movements very closely while she's in the Ukraine. It is unclear if somebody is reporting to him or he was there. My guess is there was somebody there. He claimed that he could tell whether her phone or computer were on or off. And what was really scary was he wrote, I want to quote here, "If you want her out, they need to make contact with security forces." So their people needed to make contact with security forces. It's not really clear yet if those claims by Hyde were true. Earlier this morning, Parnas' lawyer denied they were and said Hyde had a dubious mental state, was his quote, dubious mental state. I know this guy is he did serve in the Marine Corps, but on a side note, Frank, anybody who talks the blustery big talk that he talks is normally full of shit. So there's that. Even though there's, again, really relatively little about Trump specifically here, Parnas was a degree removed from the president, right? I mean, it was Parnas, it was Rudy, and it was Trump. So before we go any further, let's stop there because I want to talk. After I get your comments and thoughts on this, I want to talk a little bit about the letter that Giuliani wrote to the Ukrainians. So let's stop right there for a second.
Yeah, let me have the indulgence to jump on a little bit of what you just talked about. I want to read some of the actual texts that were sent from the esteemed Mr. Hyde about Yovanovitch. One quoted as saying, "Can't believe Trump hasn't fired this bitch," Hyde wrote in a message about Yovanovitch, who was appointed by President Barack Obama in 2016 before being ousted by Trump in May. Another text, and think about this on the heels of what you said about getting rid of her and the comments that he was making. Quote, "They are moving her tomorrow," unquote. He writes on March 25th. He had four more messages that were very specific, and I'd like to read those. Quote, "She's talked to three people. Her phone is off. Computer is off," unquote. "She's next to the embassy," quote, unquote. Quote, "Not in the embassy," unquote. "Private security, been there since Thursday," quote, unquote. "They know she's a political puppet," quote, unquote. "They will let me know when she's on the move." Hyde wrote that the unidentified individuals, quote, "are willing to help if you would like a price. Guess you can do anything in the Ukraine with money, what I was told," unquote. Last message that I'll read. Quote, "If you want her out, they need to make contact with security forces." That's the one you talked about earlier, Patsy. But that string of text messages is quite chilling when you think about the implication there. And the connection between, as you said, him and Parnas and Giuliani and Trump. And Trump himself, this is the madness. This is the connection that you have to really look at. Around this same time frame, Trump said, quote unquote, that Yovanovitch is going to go through some things. She's going to go through some things. What does that mean in mafia speak? She's going to go through some things.
Yeah, that means she's probably going to check out here pretty quick. She's as they said in The Godfather, she's going to be sleeping with the fishes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to have connections, dirty connections, to figure that one out. What I find very disturbing about this. I mean, there's a lot of things I find disturbing about this. And something you did not mention was somewhere in those texts is a text that said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing here, so pardon me. A few days later, this would be on March 29th. Hyde sent a series of texts, not very far apart, within minutes of each other, that said, "Hey brother, where do we stand? Do we stand down, or do you need intel? Be safe." The very next one, she had visitors. The very next one, and this is the one that scared the shit out of me when I saw this, it said, "It's confirmed. We have a person inside." And then the next one was, "Hey broski, please tell me what you're doing. What's the next step?" There's no response from Parnas after that, and they don't speak again for another 2 months or so. I don't know what was said after that, but that was March 25th. And well, I'm sorry, the ones I read were what, March 29th. Okay. It was March 29th. Those things happened. What gets even worse was about 6 weeks later. Zelensky gets a letter, an official letter from Giuliani on his letterhead in the whole nine yards, that starts out with, "In my capacity as personal counsel to President Trump and with his knowledge and consent, I am requesting a meeting with you." If you remember correctly, Trump denied knowing any of this. What Rudy was doing was, it was on his own, and I believe part of his quote was, he has other clients, right? The letter goes on, "However, I have a more specific request. In my capacity as personal counsel to President Trump and with his knowledge and consent, I'm requesting a meeting with you on this upcoming Monday, May 13th, or Tuesday, May 14th. I will need no more than a half hour of your time, and I will be accompanied by my colleague, Victoria Tonsig, T-O-E-N-S-I-N-G, a distinguished American attorney who is very familiar with this matter. Please have your office let me know what time or times are convenient for you, and Victoria and I will be there." Giuliani never did go on to explain what the meeting was about, but the letter's date is one day after Giuliani told the New York Times he would soon be traveling to Kiev to try to get the Ukrainian government to investigate the Bidens and supposed Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election. Giuliani also wrote in the letter that he would be accompanied by Chip, like we said, this Victoria Tonsing, a very conservative lawyer involved in the dirt digging effort that Giuliani described as being very familiar with this matter, so he probably had her on the payroll, was my guess. It's just a speculation on my part, but I don't think that's much of a stretch. The documents also revealed that when Parnas and Furman came under scrutiny in the impeachment inquiry, but before their arrest, Trump personally approved his lawyer, his former lawyer, John Dowd, represent them. Okay? And this comes from a letter from Jay Sekulow. So, and the letter states, John talked, sent to, this letter is sent to John Dowd from Jay Sekulow on October 2nd. "I have discussed the issue of representation with the president. The president consents to allowing you to allow your representation of Mr. Parnas and Mr. Furman, signed Jay Sekulo, counsel to the president. What is striking about that is, didn't Trump say on numerous occasions he had no idea who these guys were? He had no idea who Parnas and Furman were, even though he must have taken like a dozen pictures with them. He had no clue who they were. And I remember him standing in the driveway at the Oval Office saying, I take pictures with everybody. I probably took pictures with everybody here. That's awful fucking convenient that you took almost a dozen pictures with these guys. And the counsel to the president, which would be your official one, not your personal one, because it didn't say Donald Trump's attorney or attorney to Donald Trump. It says counsel to the president. So he's on our payroll. We're paying this clown. The president consents to allowing your representation of Mr. Parnas and Mr. Furman. That's one hell of a stretch that these guys have to try to... I would love to see them try to tie themselves in knots trying to explain this one away.
Absolutely. Well, you know, they all feel that they have the ultimate get out of jail card because they've got Mitch McConnell running the Senate trial. The only difference, I think, the only problem is we have the mastermind, Nancy Pelosi, running the House side of things. And people can argue all they want that, you know, the Senate will have control, and they will. And the Senate doesn't want to be told what to do, and they never do. No matter whether it's controlled by Democrats or Republicans, they don't want to be told what to do by anybody else. Unless, of course, it's Trump telling his bitches what to do. Excuse my language, but, you know, that's... you know, but the brilliance of Nancy Pelosi is this. Had she just transmitted those articles of impeachment sometime before Christmas or between Christmas and New Year's, none of the stuff that we just talked about, none of the stuff that you just outlined, none of the texts that we just read out would have been public knowledge. There wouldn't have been the same amount of pressure on individual senators who are facing re-election. There wouldn't have been the same amount of public pressure that's going to come to bear on them for their votes, all of them collectively for their votes, in a trial wherein people are going to stand trial, specifically Donald Trump's going to stand trial, and his cronies are going to, by proxy, stand trial for their actions. And they won't have a true answer for any of this. They're going to run a sham trial, regardless of how much pressure is put upon them. And that wasn't going to change whether Nancy sent those over between, you know, December 17th and December 31st. Then none of that was going to change. But what would change is the information that's out. And still more information will come out. And the pressure that will be brought to bear upon them because of that, I believe will cost senators who may have won their seats, it will cost them their seats. I believe it will have an impact long-reaching into the future of America. And, you know, we can't count on whether we're going to have a free and fair election in 2020, as sad and scary as that is. But at some point, mark my words, at some point, if they hold a sham trial, it will be the disastrous undoing and final nail in the coffin at some point in the future of the Republican Party as we know it.
I'll be honest with you, Frank. This is going to sound mean, but hear me out for a second. I certainly hope so. And the reason that I say that is because the Republican Party's been hijacked. It's been hijacked by a bunch of shitheads, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I never had a problem up until, you know, I basically want to say a lot of this shit started with the Tea Party, but I'm not so convinced they didn't just open the door, where you could have, you know, I could have conversations with very conservative people, and you know, like I said, Frank, we've said how many times to say that you and I are rather left-leaning, I think, is a bit of an understatement, right? We're proud of it. We don't deny it. But I was able to have conversations with very right-leaning, very, very conservative people. One of my favorite people that I know, and I work with the guy, and him and I are very close, and an extremely, extremely conservative person. And we have disagreements quite often, but our disagreements are not what the problem is, but how do we go about solving the problem? What you're seeing in the Republican Party now isn't people who are trying to decide how to solve a problem. They're looking to own the libs. That's it. They don't care if they burn down the house in order to do so. As long as they can get their sound bites, as long as they can get their Fox Entertainment clip and quote unquote own the libs, they're happier than shit. And they have no problem destroying everything around them in order to do it. And that's why I say I want this Republican Party to not only fail, but I want it to fail miserably. Because hopefully, whenever things get built back up, it'll go back to what it used to be, where you could have these people and have conversations with them and have disagreements with them. And the idea, you know, at least my idea being, if I push all the way to the left and somebody pushes all the way to the right, what happens in the middle is probably the best answer. Might not be the one I like the best, but for all parties involved, it probably is the best. It's that old yin and yang thing that you know, folks like me deal with. But I'm curious, what do you think? Do you think that I'm being goofy about that, or do you think that maybe that holds a little bit?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, in the absence of a quote-unquote Republican Party that has morphed into what it has morphed into today, a different party will appear, whether it's called a Republican Party or something similar to what used to be the Republican Party. And maybe we'll have more than one party. You hear rumblings of that now. I mean, more than two parties and an independent party. You hear rumblings of that now a little bit from people like AOC. And as sometimes as angry as that makes people, because we're so used to the tradition of two-party system, it's not a reality that we're going to be able to live with, I think, for many more generations. You know, I've heard from folks who actually served in the Senate, who recently retired in the Congress and recently retired, and said, kind of off the record, that the two-party system, as we know it, is basically dead. It can't survive much longer. So I do think what you said has merit for a lot of reasons. And the current Republican Party, as we knew it, as our fathers and grandfathers knew it, it won't be around much longer. And this just will seal the deal if they end up having a sham trial.
Yeah, I very much like to agree with you, and I'm very tempted to, and I very, very much want to. I'm just a very, very cynical person by nature, and I'm not doubting what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just kind of taking a wait and see attitude because, like I said, I'm very, very cynical. A whole lot of things.
I get that, and I don't think I want to make sure that our listeners and even ourselves, as we think about it, this isn't going to be an overnight thing. It'll take time, but it's just something that will happen.
To put this segment to bed. Earlier today, Yovanovitch's lawyer has come out stating that they're calling for an investigation into the disturbing surveillance as ex-diplomats outraged over her treatment. This is coming from CNN. I'm curious. Yovanovitch's attorney had a statement that said, "Needless to say, the notion that American citizens and others were monitoring Ambassador Yovanovitch's movements for unknown purposes is disturbing. We trust that the appropriate authorities will conduct an investigation to determine what happened." Do you believe that's actually going to happen?
Do I believe it's going to happen?
Yes. Well, do you believe that there's actually going to be an investigation? Do you think Barr is actually going to investigate anything?
That's what I was going to say. Who's going to investigate it? I mean, who's in charge of the investigation? So the answer is, I mean, if there is an investigation, it won't be a full and thorough investigation. It won't be an investigation intended to get to the truth. So, you know, I don't think there'll be a real investigation unless it's conducted by some independent agency that somehow takes on the responsibility in an unofficial capacity, maybe. If there's a way to get a different agency involved under the rubric of maybe, I don't know, you could possibly get the CIA involved under national security in being that some of this took place on foreign ground. the FBI, if there is any sanctity left within the FBI potentially. But ultimately they fall under Barr. So I would say the only, you know, real chance is maybe to get it into the CIA. And I don't know what happens with regard to their overseers, so to speak. So it's my answer is I'm very skeptical anything of any meaning happens as a result of that.
Yeah, I really don't think this is going to go anywhere. I think there's going to be a whole lot of bluster and a whole lot of people screaming at the end of the day. I don't see this going anywhere. Well, for lack of any kind of decent segue, what else you want to talk about? I'm sorry, I had nothing to go on.
Well, I mean, we had the Democratic debates last night, which quite frankly was overshadowed by a lot of this information and, you know, in the impeachment stuff that's been going on, which, I mean, in fairness, this is the last debate before the Iowa caucuses, correct?
Correct.
So a lot of candidates are gearing up for that and people have dropped out of the race. So I think let's talk a little bit about, you know, the shape of the Democratic field, and maybe we can segue into some of the debate topics last night, if you feel like doing that.
Absolutely.
Currently, what do you think about the makeup of the Democrat field at this point?
I am somewhat disappointed in it, to be honest. And I am disappointed in it for various reasons. The biggest reason I'm disappointed in it is because it's becoming the old white guys again, right? The older white guys, and, you know, I'm a middle-aged white guy. You wouldn't think that would bother me too much, but you are representing a very, very diverse party. And the fact that you have the same things being regurgitated over and over again, the same faces, the same people, you know, and I don't mean like specifically other than Biden, but the same generic stereotype, right? Being regurgitated over and over again. That bothers me. And yeah, you got Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren. So you do have two women in it. So I guess it's not as bad as it used to be. But I'm not thrilled with what I'm seeing. I'm not thrilled with the requirements that were placed upon these folks in order to make the debate stage. I'm not thrilled with the fact that the most wonderbred white state in our country is the first stop. So it kind of almost dictates where the Democrats are, or I should say how the Democrats are going to be represented. That bothers me a little bit. And I didn't hear anything last night, or, you know, even the highlights or the synopsis of last night, they gave me any excitement at all, to be honest. I'm not impressed with what the Democrats are doing. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've said it spot on, but there's, you know, a party that basically has touted the idea that, you know, we want to have inclusion and diversity and we want to promote women, minorities, et cetera, into positions of power. However, the remaining field seems awfully white, seems awfully male, and seems awfully beyond the age of 60 years old. So I think you've said it spot on. I think the other thing that's interesting to me as kind of a thematic thing, beyond what you've just said as a thematic thing, is there was more of a approach across the field last night to say, we're not going to attack within the party anymore. We may take a few jabs at each other here and there, but there wasn't really those kind of explosive bombshells, or there wasn't a targeted attack on one of the candidates or the other. So, you know, I don't know. There's a debate about this. I don't know if that makes the field or the ultimate candidate stronger or weaker. You know, if you battle test people as they go through the process, my argument is you get stronger. But there are people out there that say, why are the Democrats picking each other apart? Why are they giving all these talking points to Republicans? Why are they making people look bad during the Democratic debate, tearing each other down, doing the Republicans' job for them? And I get that argument. I understand it. But if people don't think for a minute that the big power machine and the money behind
and put them mistake.
What bothers me a little, a bit about this is I understand that none of these guys really want to go at each other hard. And be honest, I'm fine with that. That's okay. They don't have to, but my problem is twofold. Generally, there's still far too many people on stage for me. There should be half as many to for my taste. Second of all, I have yet to find anybody that was in this debate or the last that I thought was a fighter, that I thought can get as dirty and in the mud and as, for lack of a better term, shitty as Trump is going to get. Because if you think he's going to play, if you think what he did, he's going to do the same shit he did against Hillary, you're crazy. He's already impeached, right? He has to do something to bounce back, you know, to show that that was bullshit. He has to, you know, try to reinvent his name or to, you know, whatever the case may be. He's going to lose his shit. This is not going to be a good electoral season. This is not going to be, I want to use the word competitive in the proper sense. It's going to get dirty and ugly and it's going to be rotten. And I haven't found any of those folks yet on that stage that show that they can go toe to toe with him. If I have to pick one that probably could, I would say maybe it's Biden, simply because he's been there. But as much as I like Klobuchar, and I do like her, she can't do it. I love Buttigieg. He sure as hell can't do it. I don't think Elizabeth Warren can do it. I think she has too many credibility issues. Steyer's a fucking zit. There's no point in putting him in there. Maybe Biden, and Biden still makes me shake. And this guy was vice president, I still sit there and I look at him and I'm wondering if he has what it takes to go toe to toe with Trump. So I'm not very excited about these guys.
Yeah, I'm not either. I think that the scary thing about that in the big picture, and I'm sure you share my concern on this, is, you know, I do think that there's the thought that we want to have somebody who's not going to scare off the middle of America, you know, with crazy progressive ideas, and because they don't look like the middle of America, so to speak, and they don't talk like the middle of America, so to speak, about the issues that quote unquote middle America is concerning themselves with. So we get to this point where we get this bland, drab, you know, idea of who we're going to put forth. And even Obama said that before. He said, you know, you have to have somebody who's a very moderate person to win an election. So I get that. But the thing that worries me is in moderating in such a way, are we just almost putting up the sacrificial lamb because whoever that person is doesn't fit the mold of a fighter, like you said. They don't fit the mold of somebody who's going to have that fire to be able to say, I'm going to bring about change. Because if you remember Obama and Clinton, they ran on the idea of change, and they at least talked to the people about bringing about changes in our country that were going to be positive for America, the everyday American. And that inspired people to get out to the polls and vote for them. You know, so I don't know how you're going to inspire people to vote for a candidate that's just, you know, the bland alternative to Trump. If you think that not you, if the Democratic Party thinks for a minute that just by impeaching Trump and putting this black eye on him is going to be enough to send people to the polls to vote for whoever it is. I think that's a big mistake.
I think you have a whole lot of people on the left who just are dying, who want to go vote not for somebody as much as it is against Trump, right? They're not, I don't think they have anybody on their side that on the left that really excites them. I just think they're looking for somebody who they think can beat Trump. But you know, what did Trump say to sway, you know, the people who voted for Obama, right? What did he tell people? I hear you. I understand you. I'm going to represent you. This thing's going way out of hand. People forgot about you. I'll be your voice. Right. Yeah. And all of these Obama people went over to Trump. I'm not saying it was a shit ton, but it was enough to throw an election. And we can go on and on and on as to why, but numbers are what numbers are. How come we don't hear any of these Democrats doing that? If that's what, and let's be honest, a lot of what Obama stood for and a lot of the policies and a lot of the stuff that Obama did in his first term was that, and his second term was such a landslide win that it was frightening how quickly that thing was over. You don't hear anybody on the Democratic side say, look, you know, the stock market is at an all-time high, right? These companies, every day it's a new high. Yet what you bring home hasn't changed in 15 years. You don't hear anybody talking about that. You don't hear anybody talking about, wouldn't it be nice to go be able to go to work tomorrow and not have the slightest concern that the bridge that you're sitting on waiting for the light to turn green is going to collapse. You know, you don't hear anybody talking about these things. Instead, we're talking about, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie had an argument, a disagreement about Bernie saying if a woman can win or not. What the fuck? That's right. Not going to, that doesn't beat Trump.
Right.
You know, right. you want to wait till a day before the first primary before you start doing this?
Right. And I've argued all along that the way to turn the narrative for those folks who have been left behind, for those folks who have been sold this bill of goods, is to remind them that not only has Trump lied about things that maybe you might find insignificant or maybe you laugh about because that was one of the things that attracted you to him. If you look at your situation in Kentucky, if you look at your situation in Mississippi, in spite of the stock market being at an all-time high, is your personal situation better? Is your personal situation better? Is your bottom line better? Is your bank account bigger? Are you more or less concerned about your family's health care today than you were, you know, 4 years ago or 8 years ago? Are you more or less concerned about your ability to have a safety valve if you need it? Or in fact, when you have needed it? I mean, Trump just said the other day he's going to come after Social Security disability recipients. I guarantee you there's a shit ton of Social Security disability recipients in West Virginia and Kentucky and Mississippi. And if they think for a minute that they would be exempt from this list of folks that they're going to come after, you know, they need to be woken up and shaken a little bit. And I think that's the tack that you have to take, is remind them these are the things that are going to be enacted. If you are somebody who counts on these kind of benefits that you in fact earned these benefits, you count on them, they could be pulled out from under you under a second Trump administration. He's already lied to you by not fulfilling his promises, X, Y, and Z. You know, has he helped the farmers out? No. Has he helped our economy out? No, because the everyday American is paying more taxes to subsidize the farmers who had a good economy going, but he pulled the rug out from under them by starting his trade war. You know, so I think that they have to remind folks that the promises he made, he did not fulfill. So it was just more of a sales job. And that if they truly want people who have a track record of helping the everyday middle American, then you want to turn to a different candidate who has a track record of that. And here's this track record. And here's the person. Because you can't do it otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I think if these folks, any one of them, I'll be honest, it could be any one. Now, whenever they go head to head, it might be a different story, but you got to get there first, right? Yeah. If any one of these guys would literally ignore him and attack him, in other words, don't get distracted with any of this other bullshit he's doing. If you just stay on point and mention everything that we just mentioned and always tie the negative side of that to Trump. Let him do, let him tweet whatever the fuck he wants. Let him do whatever thing, and you know, any other distraction bullshit he wants to do. Let him go after God knows who else in the Ukraine next month. No one gives a fuck. If you just do that, this is what you need. This is why we understand what you need. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to improve life and make it better. And this is the reason why it didn't get there. And then you throw all of that on Trump's lap. Damn it, you got one hell of a shot of at least getting into the World Series.
Yeah.
You know, you do. Now you got to produce. Okay, you got there. You got to fucking win the game now. But you got to get there first. And the way these guys are going, they ain't going to get there. You know, or if they do get there, they're going to be limping in. Right? They're going to back their way into the World Series. They're not going to get there. You know, they're not going to sweep the Red Sox to get there.
Speaking of the World Series, Patsy, with just about 5 minutes left to go in this pod, what are we living through right now in history in terms of, I mean, is this equal to the Black Sox scandal? Is this equal to maybe the biggest scandal in sports history?
I'll tell you what, that was a great segue. That was awesome. You know what? It very well could be. You know what? It very well could be. This could be. Because this is more than one team now, isn't it? I mean, you have Houston, you have the Red Sox, you have, I promise you there's going to be a few more.
But we know about Houston and the Red Sox right now, for sure. That's two big World Series winning franchises within the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. I think there is. I think if I'll be honest, the way you see leagues, I'll say North American leagues, more specifically, because I think there's more of them. You know, you get into your, basically you have soccer and rugby, and that's about it. Well, you got cricket here and there, but the one thing about North American leagues, football, baseball, pick your sport, doesn't matter. They're all copycat leagues, right? Somebody's doing something that where they get an advantage. Boy, every other team in that league is going to try to do the same thing. You saw it in football with the West Coast offense. You saw it whenever. And again, we're going to go back even further. A few years before that, whenever your basic defensive formation was four down linemen and three linebackers, somebody someplace decided to put three down linemen and four linebackers, and they just nobody knew how to beat that defense. You had the Bears 46 defense. You know, you can go on and on and on down the line. I'm just using those as an example because they're easy to visualize. I find it hard to believe that. In this case, you had two clubs doing that. That with the way these clubs operate and the way that they copycat each other and the way that nobody really owns players anymore or anything like that, right? It's the league that has the contract, not the club. I find it hard to believe that it's just segregated to these two clubs. I would be flabbergasted if we find out after all said and done that it really is only those two. I think it's a great point.
And to that point, I think, you know, Major League Baseball recently asked all the other franchises to refrain from commenting on this. And I think that that may be a little window into the world of what you're talking about. Because you know, if they want to make an example of the two biggest offenders, quote unquote, maybe and then put this to bed in the sense of saying, look what we did. Look at us. We're going to beat our chest. We're going to say we did what no other North American league would do, was willing to do. We banned a coach for a year. We banned a GM for a year. Can you imagine if back in 2006, the NFL would have banned Bill Belichick for stealing signs and cheating the same? It's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
They stole signs by filming signs and realizing what the other team was going to do in the NFL. And Belichick got a slap on the wrist. And the Patriots got a slap on the wrist for that. And Houston basically lost their head coach and their GM for a year as a result of the same type of offense. So and Major League Baseball is going to beat their chest and say, look what we did. But, you know, quite frankly, I believe that if you cheated to win the World Series or if you cheated to win the Super Bowl, the right remedy would be, just like as in the Olympics, if you find out that the gold medal winner cheated to win the gold medal, you award the silver medal winner with the gold medal.
Yeah, they're stripped. Everybody moves up.
Yep.
Yep. I hope it happens. I'll be honest. I hope it does. And in that same tone, you know, I hope the NFL takes a cue from this and in retrospect, you know, strips the Patriots of a couple of Super Bowls. Of course.
That would drive some people really mad, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, I just want to do it just put these people off. You know, the biggest part about this that killed me? Oh, God, I forgot his name. I think he was the number 7 or number 8 batter in the rotation for the Red Sox. Batted like 178 for a season. How the fuck can you know what pitch is coming and still only bat 178?
Well, I mean, that's a great question.
The Mendoza line, you know?
That's a great question. And I will say this. In baseball more than football and many other sports, people will tell you that hitting a baseball and successfully hitting a baseball to get on base is one of the hardest things in all of sports because you're hitting a round ball with a round bat and you have 9 defensive players that are trying to stop you from doing it, right? Number one is the pitcher. He's trying to throw the ball in a way that will keep you from hitting it. And then you've got the other fielders fielding all these positions throughout the field that can stop you from getting on base successfully. So it's one of the hardest things to do in all of sports. So even with that advantage, but you're still getting a technical advantage over other teams. But yeah, you know, it's a great question that you pose.
Well, what was the Yogi Berra saying? They gave me a round bat and told me to hit a round ball square or something like that.
That's a good Yogiism for sure.
Oh, he was the best. Frank, great pod today. I know we want to kill this because of the impeachment article. It's going to be moved over to the Senate. It's going to be on TV. And I'll be honest, I would like to get them to watch it before, but while I can, because it is historic. So we've only lived through 3 of these.
Yeah.
Well, 2 of them, because Nixon was never impeached, but we were so young it wouldn't have mattered. Anything you want to say before we stick a fork in this thing?
I just want to thank you, man. Thank you for keeping this going into our second year. And I just want to keep it rolling, man. Let's keep going.
Let's keep it going. Yeah, everybody, like Frank and I always say, like Master Grant and I always say on Sundays, you know, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It honest to God does. You have no idea how important it is. So until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't understand that reference, you're far too young to be listening to us. For Frank and myself, goodbye, good luck, and God bless. We'll see you.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
I sense much fear in you.
Thanks for listening to Holy Shit with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Shit.